radioalburn.com.
Welcome to Truth Will Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 22nd of November 2019 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live at radioalbion.com tonight because it's Friday night and that means we have with us the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Communism by the Back Door and the soon-to-be-finished Freemasonic Victors of World War II, Mr. Dennis Wise, producer extraordinaire. Hello, good evening to you, sir. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing all right this week, yeah. I mean, it is. I think it is actually finished. I think, you know, enough went in there now for me to take a break. So, but the moment, I'm just off the back of the, we were talking earlier about The Devil Next Door, which was a new Netflix picture on John Demjanjuk, who went to Israel. They thought he was Ivan the Terrible and he got found innocent, but then later on, he was taken to Germany, found guilty, but then on appeal, died at 91. And so the law means in Germany that he must be innocent then.
Well, he is innocent. I mean, we believe he's innocent. So finally, that was a good result from the law there. Well, I would have thought your documentary had finished. I mean, the titles have come up now. I mean, that's the titles, the end titles.
Yeah, well, the thing is, For a long period last week, people couldn't watch it for some reason. Even I were, you know, I went 3, 4, 5 days for some reason. And, you know, eventually it came back on again, but I had to put it on archive for a lot of people who were, you know, looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, it worked okay on BitChute for me. So there's an archive version and there's a BitChute version. Mm-hmm. That's good news. And just there where you were talking about German law, I was listening to a Carolyn Jaeger podcast the other day, and she was talking about Ursula Haverback. And one of the things that she wrote about this German law against Holocaust denial law is basically saying that all the Germans are the accused. And yet when there's a German judge in the court and he's, you know, prosecuting this law, he's German. So he is the accused. And he's the one prosecuting the law. So he's, in effect, prosecuting the law against himself, which means that it can't be a German law. It's a Jewish law.
It's a Jewish law.
Yeah, he is prosecuting. And this is one of the questions that she put to the court when she was in prison for asking. Mm-hmm. Just for asking that question.
Well, yeah. I mean, as far as I know, the lawyers have got to be very careful because if they are, you know, the person on trial actually tries to prove by saying and mentioning the, you know, the things in the Holocaust, they can get tried again for that.
It makes them
so it's kind of handcuffed.
Yeah, it makes a mockery of the law. All these laws since the end of the war, basically. I mean, that Nuremberg Tribunal, it set the standard, didn't it? Kangaroo Court.
Well, the thing is, if I just briefly say about one of the liars in the witnesses, they got a number of caught out a number of liars. The Jewish defended Demjanjuk. He was the most hated man in Israel because every single person in Israel wanted him found guilty. But he did quite a number, and one particular guy stated categorically that this is the man. I was there when it happened, and you know it couldn't be any surer. There's no mistake. And then during the trial later on, some papers turned up that in 1943 in 1943 in a book that he was one of five others Jewish prisoners that actually killed Ivan the Terrible.
So he
obviously, he had no memory of it when he was asked about it.
Yeah, I bet it was real in my mind that he was still alive.
Yeah,
and we didn't actually
there was a Rosenberg there.
Well, so this lawyer then, he actually did a good job then. He did his job, so we should, you know, have a bit of respect for him for doing the job properly.
He never mentioned Jim Trafficant, because I know the case from when Jim Trafficant was on CNN. The other time...
I
saw anything of him, right, was on a Ku Klux Klan banner. Trafficant must be president.
So Jim Trafficant accompanied him. Remind us who Jim Trafficant is. Remind us who he is.
He was a congressman. He was nicknamed the Minuteman because he gave his speeches in such a short time. He was jailed for 7 years. The Jews went after him, or the Zionists over there went after him. He nearly died in jail. It was only a mafia guy who saved him on a couple of occasions. And when he came out after 7 years, did an interview on CNN and never went on TV again. And not long after that, was found dead in mysterious circumstances. But nobody ever looked and sounded more like John Wayne.
And he accompanied this John Damanyuk to Israel.
He was
the only
congressman. The sons of Demetriou went to try and find somebody, and he was the only congressman who would take it on. Everybody else didn't want to know. And he actually said, if I found out that he did actually, or he is, Ivan the Terrible, then, you know, obviously there's going to be consequences. But he was convinced of his innocence. He went out to Israel with him and brought him back home after the trial.
Right. So he would have been like a big enemy of the Jews, to the Jews, in their eyes.
Without a doubt. Well, he always outspoken about how much America gave to Israel, because he said in his own constituents, in his own, you know, place where he was Congress of, they were starving. You know, pensioners weren't eating enough.
And what's happened to him now, this Jim?
He was killed mysterious circumstances, 4 or 5 years ago now. I think he was on a tractor, and somehow the tractor was turned over, and somehow he was underneath it, but there were certain circumstances which never fit the scene.
Yeah, I'd heard of his name before, but I was thinking I sort of heard of it to do with the conspiracy theory crowd. I didn't realise he was a congressman.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I usually been coming in by the back door a couple of times. Great speaker, straight from the hip. Didn't take no nonsense.
And what was he, in the Republican Party?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Right. Well, you know, there are good politicians. We have had good politicians. You know, Enoch Powell. I mean, you could say Nigel Farage for bringing us the EU vote. He's done some good things. Jacob Rees-Mogg, probably not up to the standard of standing up for someone like John Damanyuk. I mean, that must have really taken some courage. And
I think he pledged his guts. Yeah, but he suffered 7 years in prison for something he never did. It was trumped up.
Yeah, what was that charge that they
I can't
used
remember
him?
Now, to be fair, but he absolutely stated that there was no way that anything underhand went on. And he was that kind of guy anyway. You know, I mean, it was just one of those straight-speaking, straight-talking guys.
Oh, I'll have to do some more research into him after this podcast. So this is a series then that's on Netflix about John Damanyuk.
Yeah, it's about five programs, about 40 minutes each. So it wasn't particularly that long to watch in one go. So I watched it today, and I must say, like, they used every, what Netflix did, they kind of, even though he was found innocent in Israel, they used every single piece of Hollywood hoax footage that I've ever seen. But the problem was, I think they shot themselves in the foot. One, because it showed, these Jews lying in the court in Israel and found out to be lying. And two, because of the internet and what's gone on over the years, we know now that the shrunken heads weren't real. We know, you know, that the soap wasn't real, even admitted by the Holocaust, you know, memorials museum. So, you know, there's always that doubt now, I think. And I think if anybody watched it who had an inkling of what was going on, then they'd definitely look at it suspiciously. But possibly if nobody knew about what was going on and watched it for the first time, then maybe, you know, they may have thought. But to be honest, I never saw one gassed body. All the bodies they showed were these rigor mortis, diseased, you know, prisoners who were stacked up in piles, or showing the SS at Bergen-Belsen throwing them in a pit, and after they were killed.
And was there a mention of shrunken heads?
No, but it showed all the footage of these emancipated bodies and showed emaciated. Like bones lying in the gas, so-called, you know, the chambers and the fire ovens. So, you know, I mean, anyone looking for the first time would and doesn't know what about typhus and things like that, they could be swayed. But anybody with the internet knowledge these days and the lies that they actually showed, then, you know, I think there'd be some doubt there.
So, in actual fact, he was found innocent, but what they're trying to do with the Netflix series is try to show that he was really guilty and it was a miscarriage of justice.
Well, it was just full of propaganda. It really was. I mean, somebody, you know, the other day said that the greatest story ever told is just Nazi propaganda. This was propaganda, because even though he was found innocent, it still kept hammering the fact that this really happened.
Well, how can they say that? Well, this really happened. If the guy was found innocent, he wasn't a part of that.
They were saying that he wasn't Ivan the Terrible, but the Holocaust still occurred.
Right. Yeah. Well, they. I mean, that just seems to be the whole point, pretty much, of television, isn't it? And film nowadays is just to convince us of that.
Yeah, I mean, I knew about Netflix before, so I never actually bothered dealing with them. But when I heard about this, somebody told me about it, and I watched it. And it didn't surprise me, to be honest. I didn't know they hammered it so much. But the sad thing is, it shows Bergen-Belsen, and it shows these German officers and women in the middle of all them bodies, you know, these emancipated bodies who died of typhus. They've no protective clothing, and they stayed behind to help at the end of the war, because there were people 500 dying a day. The British came in, and like we spoke about a while back, said that, you know, they fed them food straight away, which was the wrong thing to do. You know, they burst their stomachs open because they hadn't eaten for so long. And they're in the middle of all these bodies, and all the guilt's being put on them, and they'd stayed behind to help, and then on the promise that they'd get safe passage after. But after, you know, a few weeks later, they were murdered.
So these were Germans that stayed behind to do the medical work and help the people that were there, doctors, nurses. And
I think they were forced to carry the bodies into the pits, but at the end of the day, they were murdered anyway.
Shocking. Well, the more you hear about World War II, the more you realise just how depraved, you know, people can be. Mm-hmm. And not this, you know, this fake gas story, but the inhumane treatment of the Germans and the noble and honourable behaviour of these Germans in the face of it. I mean, they were expecting their enemy to behave honourably and stick to the Geneva Convention and all the rest of it. And at the end of the war, they were starved to death, ethnically cleansed, lined up against a wall and shot, had all their family heirlooms stolen, their watches stolen from them. You know, it's shocking stuff, and that's why it needs to be talked about, because it was such a great injustice that, you know, the German people have never been able to really even look at or talk about without seeing themselves being made out to be the bad guys. And really, you know, the whole of Europe saw something horrific during that time, and we haven't recovered from it. You know, it's ingrained in our memory.
It was the greatest mass rape in history. And people who eventually got to hear about it, their attitude would be, well, the Germans deserved it. They went into Russia and they caused all these atrocities, etc. What they didn't realise was that Stalin was going to invade. And even though during the week we came across this memo from Mr. Hoffman, who claims that it's still dubious and that the greatest story never told is just the Nazi propaganda, even he can't work out why, when Germany first invaded, they captured millions on the border. Millions of Russian soldiers on the border first few weeks.
Yeah, I wonder what they were doing there, just on that border there, all lined up ready to attack instead of...
I've never quite worked that one out.
Instead of in defensive positions. Well, hopefully somebody would do a thorough debunking of Hoffman's book.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really hope we can find someone to do that.
He says right at the end, for listeners who don't real, who haven't heard anything about this, he says right at the end, the biggest Zionist of all was Adolf Hitler. And my argument to him would be, if they'd have found Hitler alive, you know, today or 20 years ago, and took him to Israel, would he have been portrayed as still the greatest evil of all time, or a great Zionist?
Well, that's the same nonsense that Bjerknes promotes, isn't it? You know, the guy that we debunked, and his information was coming from Strasser, the leftists, the Nazbols, the one of them that was still alive that fled to Canada. And, you know, all of this anti-Hitler stuff and the stuff that's trying to say that the National Socialists were homosexual, it all came from him. It was all black propaganda that came from him. And obviously he's got an axe to grind against Hitler because his brother was killed.
Turned the bear down as well.
Yeah, well, he's you know, this Strasser, I mean, he's hardly going to be unbiased, is he? He's going to be wanting to smear Hitler's name. It's not a source that can really be trusted because he's just going to be so biased. Anyway, hopefully we'll hear more about that and more about this book of Hoffman's. He's been anti-Hitler for a long time, but this is really sort of going over the top, trying to make a profit from it and promoting it.
His means of selling the book, he's on Amazon. You can still buy from his website. So, and he's claiming that, you know, the ADL are persecuting him. Funny persecution in my eyes.
Yeah, very, very strange. Anyway, we're not here to talk about Hoffman's book today. We're going to continue with our series on Goebbels' book, Those Damned Nazis. And we're up to episode 4 tonight. It's possibly going to be our most controversial episode, I think. We've done why we are nationalists. We've done why we are socialists. We've done why we are a workers' party. And tonight, we're going to look at why do we oppose the Jews? Which you have to bear in mind, this is Goebbels writing in 1929, and I think our view of things today is a little bit more nuanced, and there are some things that were left unsaid back then that were just taken for granted that, you know, we need to stress today just because of the situation that we are in today. Begin with the first paragraph from it. We oppose the Jews because we are defending the freedom of the German people. The Jew is the cause and beneficiary of our slavery. He has misused the social misery of the broad masses to deepen the dreadful split between the right and the left of our people, to divide Germany into two halves, thereby concealing the true reason for the loss of the Great War and falsifying the nature of the revolution. So what is he talking about there? He's talking about he's defending the freedom of the German people because they were enslaved to usury, and usury was carried out by the banks. And who was it that was running the banks? It was the Jews that were running the banks. So that's what he means by the cause and beneficiary of our slavery. And then he talks about misusing the social misery by deepening the split between the right and the left of our people. And that is democracy. Democracy splits the people up between these different parties instead of having one party to represent us that's actually made of our people. And of course, the Jews are going to, you know, they want to do that because they are separate to us. They're guests in our nation, basically. They were guests in the German nation. So they wanted to split the nation up so that people are seen to be individuals, everybody's equal, because otherwise they would be seen as these outsiders. And the final bit, concealing the true reasons for the loss of the Great War, well, they were correct there because, you know, as you've shown, Dennis, there was this Balfour Declaration, there was this message to England from the Jews by an official representative of the Jews that if England was to give them Palestine, then they would bring America in on the side of England in the war, and England would win the war, basically. And finally, you've got here this falsifying the nature of the revolution. And I think what he's referring to there is communism and the communist revolution, the communist revolution that they had in Germany, which was run by Jews again. It was Jewish leaders behind that. And they're trying to say that this was a movement of the workers and it was a movement by these Jews. So that's what he starts off with saying. This is why we are opposing the Jews. And I think there's, you know, there's evidence to show that all of that is truthful. And obviously the people in Germany understood that it was truthful because they voted the National Socialists into power. But today they would say, well, you know, that's hate speaking. That's hate speech because it's being critical of the Jews. So I would say that the difference that in the way that he would put it to the way that I would put it today is this is what they have done. But we should have known that that's, you know, that's what Jews do. It's, you know, it's an evolutionary strategy. It's of benefit to them. We have to look at these things as in, you know, there is going to be conflict between one group of people and another group of people if they are in the same territory. And we should have understood that. And the reason why the Jews were able to do all these things is because our leaders gave them the right to do these things. You know, if you go back 200 years, they could never have done all those things that they did in Germany because they weren't a part of society. They had to live beyond the pale. They had to live beyond the pale of settlement. They weren't citizens. They couldn't have a say in the laws. If you go back further than that, they couldn't be a part of a banking system because usury was illegal. And who can we blame for that? Well, we can blame our own people. We can blame Oliver Cromwell for killing the king and bringing in a Dutch king who gave the Bank of England to the Jews. So we have to look to ourselves for actually allowing all of this to happen, I think. And we have to look at the Jews as in, this is just what Jews do. You know, we can't expect them to change. Yeah. What we have to do is change ourselves. And if you want to comment on that.
It started to go wrong when Napoleon freed them all up in Europe because they've been kept under watch because of their previous antics. And, you know, obviously the church had them in ghettos because they were wary of how did it, you know, infiltrate Christianity and Christians, and obviously didn't allow Christians to work for them.
Christianity did a very good job of protecting us from them. I mean, originally you just had the New Testament and what it said about them, but once the church was made the official religion of the Roman Empire and it started to have a bit of power, then they started to make laws to protect the Christians. Christians and Jews couldn't marry. Jews couldn't have Christian slaves. So in effect, Jews couldn't employ Christians. They couldn't have Christians working for them because that seemed to be wrong. Somebody was under a Jew and the Jews killed our Lord Jesus Christ. So we had those laws. They had to keep themselves separate from us. But above all, they were banned from usury. They were banned from being involved in the banking system and they were banned from taking part in civil society. And, you know, E. Michael Jones talks about this and he calls it sicut Judaeus non, which means we don't have the right to harm the Jews. You know, they are under the same laws as us, but at the same time, they don't have the right to subvert our society. So you put things in place to prevent that from happening, which is what the Germans did. They said, well, we don't want you being a part of our civil society anymore. We don't want you being politicians anymore. We don't want you being bankers anymore, because these are all positions where you can harm us. We don't want you marrying our people anymore. So they're basically carrying out these laws of the Catholic Church, which hadn't actually been used in practice for a couple of hundred years. But that's what they were doing. We're putting these things in place. So even though, I mean, Goebbels is blaming the Jews here, he's still accepting the fact that the reason why they were able to do that is because the Germans allowed them to. And the way to prevent them from doing that is to rekindle this spirit of Germanness in the German people and start making these laws that will protect them again. There's nothing about exterminating them. It was about just purely and simply protecting the Germans. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as Kevin MacDonald's shown, all of this is evolutionary strategies that the Jews have developed in order to succeed in the nations that they live among, when you look at it.
Yeah, that's probably why Hitler calls Himmler his Loyola, the leader, the first Jesuit. because they were taking lessons from the Jesuits and obviously the Teutonic Knights. So, you know, these forces what fought, you know, helped to save Christianity, protect Christianity back in the couple of hundred years, 300 years before. They learned the lessons from them, and this was like a modern-day Jesuit outfit with the laws being reinstated.
Well, that's where these ideas first took hold, was in the church. But Goebbels doesn't really mention the church here. He mentions Christianity later on when we finally get to that. He says, the Jew has no interest in solving the German question. He cannot have such an interest. And I'll just stop there because his interests are opposed to ours. You know, we're told, oh, we're all one humanity. We've all got human rights and everybody's interests are the same. But they're not. You know, I mean, my interests are different to yours, Dennis. If I was here with you and we only had a limited amount of food, you know, eventually the time would come where one of us would have to have that food and the other one would have to starve. And that's, you know, you got limited resources. So the Jews can't have an interest in solving the German question. The Jewish interest is in solving the Jewish question. So it's getting that across to people that they have to look out for themselves and they have to look out for their own nation and they have to put their own nation first.
Yeah, that probably goes with every nation.
Yeah, oh, it does. It does. Mm. I mean, that's why the Germans wanted the Jews to have their own nationalism. You know, they went along with sending them off to Israel with the Habara agreement. And there were nationalist groups, Jewish nationalist groups in Germany that were working with the National Socialists. You know, they weren't saying, well, we don't want Jews to have nationalism. We want everyone to have nationalism. That's the natural
it's
way.
It's just that we want rid of them, to be honest.
Yeah, well, if you had nationalism, they would have their own place. You know.
Yeah, but their agenda isn't about nationalism, is it? It's been going on for 3,000 years. I think the Romans upset them and they're looking for revenge ever since.
Yeah, well, yeah. Well, it's nationalism for them, but no nationalism for anyone else. That's the difference.
He says
he depends on it remaining unsolved. If the German people formed a united community and won back its freedom, there would be no place any longer for the Jew. His hand is strongest when a people lives in domestic and international slavery, not when it is free, industrious, self-aware, and determined. The Jew caused our problems and lives from them. So that's saying, you know, that's pretty much saying the same thing. If the Germans had their freedom and they were a community, there would no longer be any room for the Jew there because it would be the German community. It's like if you have your own family and your own household, you don't have other people that are a part of that household. That would be unnatural. But that's the situation we're expected to live in.
Yeah, I think the problem he had there, though, was once they'd been invited into Germany, in the early days, you could probably spot one from 300 yards. But, you know, slowly but surely, you know, the features changed with the mixing of the race. And at the end of it, you'd struggle to find one, you know, what you say definitely a Jew.
Well, and that's encouraged as well, isn't it? You know, this assimilation is encouraged. I mean, the Germans weren't encouraging the Jews to assimilate. They were encouraging the Jews to show that they were separate from the Germans.
Exactly.
That was why they had to wear the item of clothing. And again, you know, that's a church law that the Jews had to wear specific items of clothing so that they could tell them that they were different to the Germans or to the Christians. And, you know, today, I mean, you get civic nationalists saying, oh, if only these Muslims would assimilate. You don't want them to assimilate. And it's not fair to try and get them to do that. They're not, you know, they're not white people. Jews aren't us. You know, they're Jews. I prefer them when they show they're Jews.
The Muslims want to assimilate, do they?
No. Well, that's what I mean by it's unnatural to expect that.
Have their own clique, if you like. I mean, granted, they venture out and we have cases like Rotherham and places like that, but that's a different thing altogether. They don't want to assimilate.
And he says, that is why we oppose the Jew as nationalists and as socialists. So he's opposing them as nationalists because they shouldn't actually be in there as a part of the German nation pretending to be Germans. because they're not. And the opposition to them as socialists is because of through this banking system, through usury, through the, you know, if it was another people that were running the banking system and they were using usury and everybody was slaves to usury, it would be another people that we were pointing that out about. And that is a fact. We have a banking system that's based on debt. It's based on adding interest to everything and monetizing people's promises to pay back whatever they're borrowing. So it's basically, it's all based upon debt. It's not based upon any value. And it's the banks that produce this money, but we then have to pay that back through all the work that we do. It's only us that actually give the value to that money. So, you know, that's what the opposition is about. It's not saying you're somebody else, so we're opposed to you. It's because you're doing these things and you're within our nation doing these things, we are opposed to you. If you were outside of our nation, it wouldn't be any of our business, and we wouldn't be bothered by it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not particularly bothered by Israel, apart from when it interferes, you know, in what Britain and America is doing.
Well, I can understand you saying that, but when I feel that the New World Order is just around the corner and they are the ones who will run it, and they've already brought in things like the Noahide Law, which only need a switch to switch them all on, that's my argument with Israel, because they do want to rule the world.
Well, they do, but what I'm saying is, you know, if they were all just there in Israel and we didn't have them as members of our governments, and we didn't have this conservative Friends of Israel, Labour Friends of Israel, well, I mean, it wouldn't be a problem.
Wonderful, yeah.
You know, if they were like Taiwan, I mean, a place like Taiwan, we don't have conservative Friends of Taiwan, we don't have Taiwanese exactly. people in government and running the banks. You know, that's what the issue is. It's not, oh, they killed Christ, which is, you know, what some people have said, or it's not because of their, it's not because of their religion. You know, some people say, well, the Germans were against the Jews because of their religion. You know, it's not because of any of that. It's because of the actions that they carried out. And Goebbels continues. He says, he has ruined our race, corrupted our morals, hollowed out our customs, and broken our strength. We owe it to him that we today are the pariah of the world. He was the leper among us as long as we were German. But when we forgot our German nature, he triumphed over us and our future. And again, you know, you can see the evidence for that in the Weimar Republic with the corruption of the morals there. And again, you can see the same happening today. The hollowing out of the customs, because Christian customs mean that Jews can't take part. So they tried to get rid of the customs. They got rid of our oaths so that they could become members of parliament in Britain. And that's how it broke the German strength, and it's breaking our strength today. For the Jew to succeed, he has to break down all our ways that we actually identify with ourselves, because he's not a part of ourselves. Once you start identifying with who you are, the Jew is excluded. That's why he promotes anti-racism all the time and immigration. It's because he's living within somebody else's country. I don't know how much Israel interfere and promote immigration. I guess they still do, don't they? Because they offload their immigrants to us.
They don't accept any. They send those back.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, you know, whether they speak out and say, "Oh, Europe should be letting them in," because they have a sort of right-wing government there, don't they?
Say that, but I watched the programs of the week, and it actually showed these NGOs, these from Israel. So they've come from Israel. They brought medical equipment, and as these migrants were struggling to get ashore, you know, the Syrian refugees, believe it or not, and the Israelis were technically at war with Syria. These Israelis were hugging them, and the Syrians were hugging them because they were so thankful. Now they got food and they've got some medicine. But it's the agenda why they're doing it. I mean, you can understand why a Syrian's happy to see, you know, what's in front of them, but the reason they're in front of them is totally different.
Yeah, I've seen the video, and they're inviting these refugees onto Greece. It's Greek soil.
Yeah,
they're not bringing them into their own land. They're bringing them into Greece and welcoming them in. And that's because it breaks down the unity of the Greek people, and then the Jews find it easier to live there because the unity's been broken down. They're just the same as everybody else because everybody's individuals.
Well, I heard just after World War II, there was hardly any, you know, migrants in Europe as such. Where today, you know, there's at least 20 million, and it's going to get more.
Yeah, well, it's of benefit to them. You know, that's the thing. Exactly. It is of benefit to them. And when he says here, today we are the pariah of the world, and he's blaming the Jews for that's because of the end of the war, because they lost the first war. And they did become the pariah of the world, the outcast, because they lost the war. And he says here, he was the leper among us as long as we were German. And, you know, you can look at that again and say, well, as long as we were Christian, you know, he was also seen as the equivalent of the leper, because he had to live outside and apart from the Christians. He had to live in the pale of the settlement. He had to live in his own separate area with his own separate rules and laws, and couldn't take part because we were a Christian. And alongside with that alongside when we were German, because we lost our identity with our nations at about the same time that we lost our Christian character to our nations as well. I think they're both linked in together there. And that's why they fight against this resurgence of nationalism today, because British nationalism doesn't include Jews, because, you know, it's Jewish nationalism that includes Jews, and they're living in Britain. So, you know, it's quite logical when you think about it. The way that they behave is quite logical. That's what I'm saying. It's, you know, the fault lies with us for allowing it to go on. And that's actually what Goebbels is saying here, but he's not being explicit about it. They were never really explicit about the fact that it was the Germans' own fault that they let the Jews do all of this, and that they should have known that the Jews are going to do all of this. I mean, it's all there in history. They did know that, but they, you know, they weren't too explicit about it when speaking to the public. That's, you know, that's the thing that I see that's really sort of different to, you know, what they were saying back then and what we're saying today. He says, the Jew is the plastic demon of decomposition. Now, I like that, because plastic is unnatural. So he's sort of saying he's unnatural as well. He says, where he finds filth and decay, he surfaces and begins his butcher's work among the nations. He hides behind a mask and presents himself as a friend to his victims. And before they know it, he has broken their neck. And, you know, there's lots of analogies that have been drawn between, you know, where he says here, filth and decay. Well, what's filth? Well, it's pornography, isn't it? It's pornography, it's perversion, it's the sex industry and all of that. And we know that they run pornography. They boast about running the pornography industry. They boast about changing the decency laws so that pornography could be shown in America. You know, that is where they surface in all these areas. And that's why I say they're there to tempt us. And
yeah,
this
agenda,
like,
I mean, it comes second nature to them. Probably, I don't know if it's instilled in them when they're younger, but this, like I just said earlier about this revenge from 3,000 years ago, they're using every tactic they can, which, you know, apart from the occasional war and revolution, when they're not going on, then they're using feminism, and they're using other means, you know, to break us down. I mean, I don't know if you remember, I don't know if you saw it or not, but there's a TV program with for a dating game where all the girls are lined up there. The guy comes out, and if they like him, you know, the lights go on and they find a partner. Well, the other week somebody came out and all the girls were all buzzing. And when asked for his what he liked to do, he said he was religious. And nearly all the lights in the house come on, dumping him.
And why is that? Why have people been programmed to think like that?
It's because that's exactly what they are, programmed.
They break down our religion. So it's quite true that's where you will find Jews, and today promoting homosexuals and all the rest of it. And where it says here, he hides behind a mask and presents himself as a friend to his victims. I mean, all these ideas, feminism, human rights, they're all presented as being a really good thing that's best for everyone, and tolerance. And, you know, and we know from experience that tolerance means intolerance of anybody with a different point of view. And this acceptance of homosexuality, that so that these homosexuals don't kill themselves, means it being promoted to our children and drag queen story hours in the libraries. Well,
the latest one, believe it or not, Equity, the music union, have made an agreement now with the theatres not to introduce, as they always have done, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to tonight's show. They have now refused to do that now, and it's going to be binary and non-binary and whatever, because they don't want to upset certain people. We're not even 1% probably of the nation. But this is how it's all going.
Well, what is that? Well, that is decomposition, isn't it? That is breaking down the, you know, the very society. Language that we have. And that's what he's saying, that the Jew is the plastic demon of decomposition. You know, it's the force that breaks down these definite things that we have, such as gender and race, and the Jews try to break it down. And we resist against it. You know, I mean, we find virtue in the fact that we resist against these temptations. And it seems to me that the Jews' place in the world is to put those temptations before us. You know, that's just the way that they are. We have to accept that and resist it. And if our people had only resisted it, and we can resist it, we wouldn't be in the situation that we're in today. You know, we can't blame the Jews for it. We can really only blame ourselves for allowing it to happen. You know, I think that's the best way to look at it. And that's when you feel that you're actually doing something to help by resisting it, instead of, you know, wishing things are going to happen when they can't happen, or, you know, dreaming about taking over the government or having an uprising and a revolution, all these things. And you'll find that the Jews will encourage that. The Jews will encourage nationalists to commit violence and revolution because they know that that's going to be a benefit to them. It's impossible.
It's going to be a bloodbath, isn't it? And there's only one winner.
Yeah. And that's where we are at our weakest. So you got to look at these things like it's a battle between good and evil, really. And I'm sure the Jews, well, you know, a lot of the Jews see themselves as being on the force of good, you know, and us being on the side of evil. You know, they talk about bringing a light to the nations, don't they?
I just saw the Talmud up.
Yeah, well, you know, we can see what's in there. And continuing with Goebbels, he says, the Jew is uncreative. He produces nothing. He only haggles with products, with rags, clothing, pictures, jewels, grain, stocks, cures, peoples, and states. He has somehow stolen everything he deals in. When he attacks a state, he is a revolutionary. As soon as he holds power, he preaches peace and order, so that he can devour his conquests in comfort. And again, you know, that's a truthful characterization of what the Jews have done throughout history. They've always been middlemen. You know, that meme, the happy merchant, it's a merchant. What's a merchant? Well, it's somebody who buys products from one person and sells the products to someone else. Look back in history. Look at the Canaanites. What does Canaanite mean? It means merchant. And that's where these Jews originated from. It was never in creating things. It was always in buying things from somebody and then selling them on. And when they get involved in usury and money lending, you know, and that interest needs to come back, that's when they acquire these things. I mean, today with the banks, they don't actually have to have anything in order to produce the money. But then when we have to pay that back, we have to create items in order to get the money to pay them back. And those items that we create, he can then buy with the money. So he doesn't actually create anything. We do all the creation of the value. That's why he says
he's
wealthy. Yeah, that's what he says here. Somehow he's stolen everything. And when he attacks a state, he's a revolutionary. But as soon as he holds power, he preaches peace and order, so that he can devour his conquests in comfort. And that's what we're told today. You know, they preaching peace, and we have the United Nations to prevent wars, and all it does is go about the world starting wars. If you look at what America has done since the Second World War,
how do you persuade a government to allow you to print the money so that they can buy it off you with interest?
It's incredible. It's
unbelievable.
But this is the thing, though, Dennis. This is the thing. You know, our ancestors thought, well, that's not possible. It's not possible that these things could happen to us. And
their, I agree with that.
You know, their ego was too much, and they thought, well, you know, we can allow the Jews to do just this little bit, and it won't do any harm. We'll and then we'll just ignore what our traditions say. We'll just ignore what our Bible says here, because that's old fashioned. And now we can see where it leads to.
What you're saying is dead true on another subject, because I never believed that they could get rid of Christmas. But I saw a newspaper headline a couple of years ago in this certain village or town, wherever it was in England, saying there's no Christmas decorations, nothing is going up because it will offend the Muslims. Now, we haven't got quite to that point nationally, but if ever they do get into a majority, Christmas is going to go. And I never thought I'd ever see that. But then I never thought about loads of Muslims in the country.
Well, you know, if you were to go back 300 years ago and say that there would be Jews in Parliament and there would be Jews running all the media and deciding on what we'd be teaching in schools, you know, they would say, well, you're mad.
You know, some say that today.
they don't believe it, do they?
They don't believe it, no.
But they used to be excluded, and excluded for a good reason, you know, to prevent them from doing this. You know, because this harms them as well, because it gets to a stage when the Gentiles rise up and there's a pogrom and lots of Jews die and they get kicked out of the country that they've been living in. So it doesn't benefit them either to give them these rights and to treat them as equals with the people in the country that they live in. It doesn't benefit them. It ends up with, you know, all these terrible things happening that the Jews look back on history and say, look at all these horrible things that the Gentiles did to us. You know, the reason why the Gentiles did that is because the Jews did something to them. But the reason why Jews did something to them is because the Gentiles allowed them to. You know, it's that same story with the scorpion and the frog. And the scorpion says, can you just give me a lift across the river? And the frog says, well, you'll sting me. And he says, no, I won't. I promise I won't. And the frog puts the scorpion on his shoulders, goes across the river, and the scorpion stings him. Now, whose fault is that?
Well, that's fair enough. But there's also that streak of... most of them are now either the Saudi royal family or they're in Israel. Them Sabbateans who, you know, they don't really care about Jews neither. Yet they pretend to be Jews and they pretend to be Christians.
Well, the Sabbateans, that was Levy, wasn't it?
That's right.
Is that his name, Sabbateus Levy? Is it some particular type of Jewish sect around about the time of the Illuminati, wasn't it?
Yeah, they did everything opposite to, you know, if it were good, they did everything bad.
Yeah, and there are Jews today that say that those Sabbateans did nothing but do harm for Judaism.
Oh, yeah, exactly, yeah, but they're still around.
Yeah, well, they were all following them at the time. You see, this is the thing, if you allow them to do these things, then, you know, they will push the envelope until we end up in the situation that we're in today. So, you know, it's just better for them to keep them separate from us. It's better for us and it's better for them.
But then they plead, you know, the victim, and then, you know, people in, you know, because the white race generally is quite, you know, forgiving, and, you know, people do feel sorry for them and fall into the trap, and then that allows them out again to do what they do best.
Well, yeah, it's like a cycle, isn't it? And, you know, we should become more virtuous through it, really, you know, eventually. I mean, we're still here. We're the most virtuous ones, you know. All the other whites have fallen to miscegenation, and we're the last ones left now. So, you know, we should be pretty virtuous, you know, even if we look at what's going on today and say we're not. You know, our actual genes and our inheritance tells us otherwise. Continuing with Goebbels, he says, what does anti-Semitism have to do with socialism? I would put the question this way. What does the Jew have to do with socialism? Socialism has to do with labour. When did one ever see him working, instead of plundering, stealing and living from the sweat of others? As socialists, we are opponents of the Jews because we see in them the incarnation of capitalism, the misuse of the nation's goods. And of course, it was the Jews that were promoting communism. They were right at the front of promoting communism, and yet, you know, they're right at the top of capitalism.
This is what these students in universities in America today don't understand. They can't see it. They just think communism is a movement to get rid of these rich capitalists. It ain't never going to happen.
Well, yeah, but the reason for that is because they've been told, oh, race doesn't exist. So they look at the capitalists and at the top, they don't see Jews. They see people just the same as themselves. They say, oh, these are people just like me that are at the top. What does it matter what different type they are? They're white people at the top. They don't realize that it's Jews at the top. So again, it benefits them to have everybody else not believing in race and not seeing race and not being able to tell the races apart and the nations apart, because it helps to disguise themselves.
Well, there's that famous poster, isn't it, showing the Jew with the glasses and the black hat hiding behind the curtain.
Yeah.
And that's where they are.
Used so many times. He says, what does anti-Semitism have to do with nationalism? I would put the question this way. What does the Jew have to do with nationalism? Nationalism has to do with blood and race. The Jew is the enemy and destroyer of the purity of blood, the conscious destroyer of our race. As nationalists, we oppose the Jews because we see them as the eternal enemy of our national honour and our national freedom. So why would that be? Well, it would be because they try to interbreed with the Germans. As much as the Jews try to say, well, Jews only breed with other Jews, when they move into other countries, they breed with the aristocracy of that country. You can see it today with Zuckerberg marrying that Chinese girl. And so many, David Cameron, he's descended from Jews.
The royal family.
Yeah, Boris Johnson, he's descended from Jews. You know, the Jews have interbred with the nations that they're in, which basically destroys the purity of the blood, and they are doing it consciously. So when you look at it that way, you know, that they're a conscious destroyer of our blood and the destroyer of the purity of the blood. All the while you allow miscegenation, which is something that they continually promote in their adverts, because they know that it wears us down, because we are their competitors. I mean, in their Talmud, if you want to look at the religious side, it says that we will all be slaves to them. And it tells them how to go about doing that, how to go about deceiving us. Whereas in our book, in the Christian Bible, it says we should keep ourselves separate from these other races. We should just have nothing to do with them. We shouldn't be seeking to rule over them. And at the same time, we shouldn't be seeking to help them either. Given the medicine,
I can't understand why these people turn around and say that the Christians and the Jews are just the same. I really can't get my head around that. These pagans will say this, you know.
Well, that's mainly because the establishment church has been taken over by the Jews, the same as the government and all the rest of the establishment. So they don't really tend to look back at, you know, what it originally was. I don't think you know they actually look at what it says in the Bible.
No.
You know, pagans will attack it, but you know, it's a racial book, and it tells us we shouldn't have anything to do with these other races. And don't forget, you know, there's always also this temptation to help these other races as well, which is why we've given them medicine and you know, help them out with technology and all the rest of it. And all that's done is harm us, because we should have been leaving them alone. Basically,
yep.
You know, the devil works in so many different ways, and one of the ways is to work on our mercy and our charity, and to misuse it by directing it to our racial competitors.
Yeah.
And that's why they never thank us for it. You know, they'll always call us racist.
They expect it.
Yeah, even once we've let them into our countries, they'll still be calling us racist. He says, but the Jew, after all, is also a human being. Clearly, none of us doubts that. We only doubt that he is a decent human being. He does not get along with us. He lives by other laws than we do. And I'll just point out, there's a quote in the Bible that says that he lives by other laws than the rest of humanity. The fact that he is a human being is not sufficient reason for us to allow him to subject us to his inhumane ways. He may be a human being, but what kind of a human being is he? If someone slaps your mother in the face, do you say, thank you, he is after all a human being? That is not a human being, it is a monster. Yet how much worse has the Jew done to our mother Germany and is still doing today? And again, well, go on, you can list some of these things that the Jews had been doing to Germany at the time, Dennis.
Well, I think it stems from the fact that they think they're the chosen people and so above everybody. When they look at us as cattle, and they feel that they're the, you know, the ones that are given the right to rule the earth. Everything stems from this. And somebody once said to me, "What have the Jews ever done to you?" I said, "Well, from the day I was born, you know, the banks have charged me usury. You know, they've done certain things to restrict me from doing certain things, which people just won't believe. But if they really looked into it, and when people do look into it, it's there to be seen."
Well, again, look at what he's saying. Look at what the Jews have done to us. But really, it is what the Germans did to themselves. You know, they allowed themselves to be subverted and corrupted and perverted, the same as we all have today. The white race has done today. We've allowed drag queen story hour in the libraries. You know, we've allowed homosexuality and pornography. We've allowed race mixing. We've allowed all these things to happen. Yes, the Jew has promoted it, but he's still only 2% of our nations. You know, it's our people in power that let him do that.
That's right.
He says there are also white Jews. True, there are scoundrels among us, even though they are Germans, who act in immoral ways against their own racial and blood comrades. But why do we call them white Jews? You use the term to describe something inferior and contemptible, just as we do. Why do you ask us why we oppose the Jews when you, without knowing it, are one too? So what he's pointing out there is that these traitors that we have, that are actually white, that by behaving in the way that they do, they are pretty much just the same as Jews. So he calls them white Jews.
Well, there were white Jews there. I remember on the...
Yeah, that's not what he's talking about, though. I don't think that's not what he's talking about, though, because, all of them, could look similar to Germans. What he's talking about there is when you've got scoundrels among us, even though they're German. So what he would be talking about there is like badly behaved British people, say liberal Democrats and Labour politicians that aren't actually Jewish, but are going along with the same agenda. That's what they're referring to as white Jews there.
Well, it's just that woman called that American soldier white Jew in that documentary, and he was kind of going to smack her or something because he hated.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's it. Yeah. That's it. Yeah, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. So that would be a term that you call somebody that's white that's behaving like a Jew, basically, saying, they are no better. And then he says, anti-Semitism is not Christian. If it is Christian to allow the Jews to go on as they are, stripping the skin from our bodies and mocking us. To be a Christian means to love one's neighbour as oneself. My neighbour is my racial and blood brother. If I love him, I have to hate his enemies. He who thinks Germany must despise the Jews, the one requires the other. Again, it's very truthful. Very truthful. To love your neighbour means to love your racial kinsman.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you love your racial kinsman, then you will hate what harms your racial kinsman, the same as you would hate what harms anything that you love. Love and hate are two sides of the same. You know, they're part of love. Hate is a part of love. Otherwise, love means nothing. And that's what the true Christian meaning is, to love your neighbour as yourself.
Hitler once said that Marxism is some kind of psychology which turns, a person against his own family, yet calls his African or some other person, not of his country, as his brother. And that's exactly what happens when you say all these leftists. They'll turn their back on the family to help Africans into the country.
Well, and that's the way that the church promotes this now as well. They promote the idea that, loving your neighbour means you've got to love Africans. Loving your enemy means you've got to invite Muslims in. And again, that's not, what traditional Christianity is. And at this time, this idea was being pushed that anti-Semitism is not Christian because you're supposed to be turning the other cheek to the Jews. And again, that's not what the church originally taught. He says, Christ himself saw that love did not always work. When he found the money changers in the temple, he did not say, children, love one another. He took up a whip and drove them out. We oppose the Jews because we affirm the German people. The Jew is our greatest misfortune. It is not true that we eat Jews for breakfast. It is true that slowly but surely he is stealing all that we have. But things would be different if we behaved as Germans. And that's the important bit there, right at the end there. You know, if they were just as Germans and lived as Germans, they wouldn't have Jews there because they would just have Germans there. You know, as I was saying, like in the family household, you don't have other people in the family household. You have your family in there.
To be fair, though, to the German population and to the British population over here who are kind of ignorant to all this, you know, they have used secret societies and they have used a lot of underhanded ways of doing things. Even the TV they've used to their advantage, you know, where people are, you know, totally unaware of what's going on. And if they knew, then things might be different. But like Hitler once said, that we are no match for these people. They get up in the morning and they've got on their mind straight away, how can they do things to bring us down?
Well, they have been very clever. We've underestimated
very
them.
Very clever.
That's what I mean. Our ancestors underestimated them. They thought, well, we can make a bit of a profit out of them if we just give them a little bit of leeway.
Yes.
You know, and that again, that's that temptation. That's where it comes in. Anyway, we've reached the end of the podcast. That flew past tonight, Dennis.
Didn't it fly?
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for coming on.
Okay, pleasure.
Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We will be back next Friday with more Truthful Out Radio for you. And, of course, we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.
RadioAlbion.com